ओम ज्ञानति निरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जन शलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
श्रीमद्भागवतम् कैंटो 6 चैप्टर 1 टेक्स्ट 48.
जस्ट श्रीमद्भागवतम् प्रणीतपितल श्लोक 48.
Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, founder Acharya Viscom. Srimad Bhagavatam is a broad exposition of the absolute truth in all its categories.
Srimad Bhagavatam je rozsáhlý výklad absolutní pravdy ve všech jejich kategoriích.
That which is described concisely in Bhagavad Gita is described elaborately in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Now in Bhagavad Gita, one of the most basic and important lessons we learn is how the living beings in this material world are transmigrating from one body to another. We also learn how this material world is going on under the supervision of the Supreme Lord. Mayadhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. And how the Supreme Lord is ahituna anena konteya jagad viparivartate, and how the Supreme Lord is the original cause of the creation. Now, these subjects are more elaborately described herein, within this Bhagavad Purana, the Purana or the history of the universe, which specifically gives knowledge of Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sometimes people, they reject the Puranas as being simply stories. But within these stories are demonstrated the philosophical truths which are discussed within the Upanishads, Vedanta philosophy. Now, within this history of the life of Ajamil, we see how Ajamil, as a specimen conditioned soul, was about to leave his body. By specimen, we mean that it's not that Ajamil was different in many ways to anyone else. That the Yamadutas came to get him wasn't just because he was Ajamil. They come for everyone and every human being in this material world, except those who are engaged in highly pious activities or those who are devotees of the Lord. So through the history of Ajamil, we are being taught how the process of reincarnation goes on and how the process of getting free from the process of reincarnation goes on. Ajamil was to be brought before Yamaraj, who is here described as Bhagavan, which means omnipotent. He is omnipotent within a certain sphere. Within his sphere of activities, he has complete rule. He works under the direction of and in cooperation with the Supreme Lord. But as a trusted agent of the Lord, he is fully empowered to send the sinful, particularly the sinful living entities, here and there into various suffering conditions. So he's one of the demigods who helps the Supreme Lord in administering this material world. And his particular function is to oversee the judgment of sinful persons and subsequently punish them. This is explained also in more detail in other cantos of Bhagavatam. In the third canto, it's already explained, karmana deva netrena jantur deho papatye, that according to one's activities and under the supervision of the Supreme Lord and the demigods, his assisting demigods, the living beings get body after body. Now there the term is used, deva netra, which means the divine eyes, the eyes of the Supreme Lord. Or deva can also mean demigod. Here the definition of deva is given in the Anvaya, the word for word. Divyati ti devaha, one who is always brilliant and illuminated is called deva. So demigods, their bodily constitution is shining. They are effulgent, just like our devotees become effulgent. And those who are not godly, they're dull. They look like a walking cloud, walking depression. Even you see these advertisements, smiling toothpaste advertisement, but the smile is only the lips, not the, there's no effulgence. The demigods, they are effulgent. The Supreme Lord is effulgent. They are situated in goodness and beyond goodness. So this material world goes on under the supervision of the Supreme Lord. And particularly, it's mentioned in this verse, karmana deva nitrinadi, how the living beings get different bodies under the supervision of the Supreme Lord. Now, sometimes we hear that our desire is fulfilled, that we get a body according to our desires, but it's also according to our karma. For instance, someone may desire to be a big leader, but there can't be that many big leaders. At election time, so many people are trying to become the leader, but only one can. So that desire may be fulfilled in a future life. But it's not that because everyone desires to be the president of the country, that in his next life he's sure to become the president of the country if he didn't make it in this life. But he may become a leader according to his karma. He may be in the street among all the dogs and be the biggest barking dog, and in this way become the leader. The Supreme Lord fulfills the desires. He wanted to be a big leader. According to his karma, he got the opportunity. Among all these different species, we find that there's a leader. The queen of the ants must be extremely puffed up. All the ants are simply serving her. In English, there's a saying, the queen bee. It means someone who's like the center of everyone's attention. Do you say that in your language? Probably not. You say someone, the queen bee, means someone who's, everyone's around them, everyone's looking at them, taking attention of them. So everything is going on under the supervision of the Supreme Lord and his assistants. It's very complex. That Krishna says in the Gita also, it's very difficult to understand the workings of karma. We see in the case of Nriga Maharaj that even though he performed so many pious activities, that it appeared that his future heavenly happiness was guaranteed. For a minor discrepancy, he had to become a lizard. Hellish condition. So it may be very difficult to understand exactly what's going to happen in your future life. Sometimes devotees like to go to astrologers and ask them, well, am I going to be liberated in this life? An astrologer has to make a living, he has to say something. Usually he'll say yes. But actually it's very difficult to say. Even we see in the case of Jayananda Prabhu, who was a great devotee in this movement, who left this world before Srila Prabhupada, and was very dear to Srila Prabhupada. So Prabhupada wrote a letter to him after his departure, congratulating him and thanking him. And in that letter he said that maybe you have gone to the spiritual world, but if you had even the slightest trace of material desire, then you must have gone to the heavenly planets. So even Prabhupada wasn't saying definitely you went here or you went there. It all depends on the consciousness at the time of death, which is another important lesson from the story of Ajamil, that despite his sinful life, at the time of death, he thought of Narayana. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, Prabhupada explains that at the time of death, he called Narayana, thinking of his son. But then, in fear of the Yamadutas, he remembered Narayana, the personality of Godhead who he'd worshipped in his youth. Prabhupada explains in the Ishopanishad commentary that at the time of death, a person sees his whole life spread out in front of him, just like a movie. He sees like on a movie. You see your whole life in front of you. So that is a great benefit for those who have performed devotional service. That at the time of death, they can remember that they performed some devotional service. So even someone who has fallen from the standard of devotional service, at least he can remember that at the time of death. Of course, the consciousness that we develop after that, if we go away from devotional service, that also influences how we perceive our devotional service. If someone, after performing devotional service, develops an offensive attitude, then when he thinks of his previous devotional service, he may think, oh, how I was wasting my time. But we see here, Ajamil, he hadn't developed an offensive attitude to the Supreme Lord or his devotional service. He had certainly cultivated a wicked mentality, which had led him to be offensive to many people And his giving up his brahminical vows and his giving up his service to the Supreme Lord, that was also offensive. It's certainly offensive to give up one's service to the Supreme Lord having started it. But he wasn't offensive in the sense that he had deliberately cultivated a malicious attitude towards the Supreme Lord. More or less he forgot his Bhagavad Bhakti, being absorbed in thoughts of very degraded sense gratification. But there's no record of him insulting the Vaishnavas or performing or blaspheming the Supreme Lord. So the Supreme Lord, out of his kindness, was willing to forgive Ajamil and give him a good chance. Krishna is very kind. This we also understand from this narration of Ajamil. Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashiti. My devotee is never vanquished, Krishna says. Ajamil forgot Krishna. Krishna didn't forget him and gave him the opportunity to remember him again by inspiring him from within the heart to name his child Narayana. He could have named the child by any other name. For a rose by any other name smells as sweet. You can call a child whatever you like. You can call a child any name. Of course, usually within Vedic culture, there's some specific rules for choosing a name according to the astrological configuration in which they're born. But we don't know even if Ajamil was following even that much. Now, he could have chosen a name like Hiranyakashipu or one of you, someone more in his line at the time. But Krishna inspired him to call the child Narayana. And as a result, he was constantly chanting the name of Narayana. Krishna was giving him a chance to perform not exactly devotional service, but a shadow of devotional service, to perform this namabhas, one kind of namabhas, by which he became purified. Prabhupada comments in the purport that how in Indian culture, even today, people like to give names of the Supreme Lord to their children. Although unfortunately, with like so many other things in India, so many other aspects of Indian culture that's being forgotten now. And even you find people, they're given names of the Supreme Lord, and they don't know. I often meet people in India, I ask them what their name is, and they say, oh, that's the name of Krishna. I say, no, I didn't know that. They're 40, 50 years old. They don't know. Just like all the names in the West also. Actually, they're originally names of God. Yes. Look surprised. It's true. They're... all these names, if you go to make linguistic research, you'll find they all have some meaning, usually describing some quality of the Supreme Lord. Or, like they're usually describing some quality which is originally in the Supreme Lord. Because even in the West, people at one point in time were all theistic.
Theistic.
So, just... like that, they wanted to keep their, they wanted to have their child's name to remind them of God. Now that connection has been forgotten. Just you choose a name and you give it, that's all. You have no idea what it's meant for. Culture was there originally that we should give some name which will remind us of God, in the hope that the child will develop that quality which is in God. So in India, that was very much the culture, and still in some places that's going on. Although you find now in India, often the people, they give some name which they think is a Western name, but it sounds really stupid. Especially girls' names, they choose such stupid names. Beauty, Dimple, stupid names. I don't know, you can't translate. Beauty, you can translate that as. Dimple, what does that mean? I don't know. So, but previously, even the smartest, they often used to give names of Vishnu, because the smartest, even they, they think that the name of Vishnu is very auspicious, because in Shastra it said that by chanting the name of Vishnu you get free from sinful effects. That's why you'll find previously in India, so many people, they used to, early in the morning, they would chant Vishnu Sahasranam, or Gopal Sahasranam, the thousand names of Vishnu, or the thousand names of Gopal. With the idea that we'll get free from sinful reactions and we'll be blessed by God by doing this. So not exactly, not trained in pure devotion. That smarter idea that we should do everything to get free from our sinful reactions. Still, there's some connection with Krishna. So that you'll find so many boys in the smarter community given names like Nanda Kumar, Nanda Kishore, Gopal Krishna, names like this. Very nice names. So that helps them. They have some reverence for the name of Vishnu. That's why Prabhupada sometimes he used to say that everyone in India is Krishna conscious. So you may wonder, well, how is that possible? You go to India, it doesn't look like everyone's Krishna conscious. But because of that culture was Bhagavad Kendrick, it's centered on Krishna consciousness. So even though so many people may be very materialistic, because the culture is God-centered, therefore it's difficult not to be God-conscious to some extent. And because of that culture of giving the names of God, therefore you'll find in common life, you'll find everywhere the name of Krishna. Just like you'll find the nearest town to Mayapur is called Krishnanagar. Who's it named after? Not Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but a king whose name was Krishna. He was named after the Personality of Godhead, and therefore that name came in the town. And you'll find in Calcutta, for instance, you'll find so many streets they named after the names of prominent people. So you'll get the street name just like Sir Hari Ram Goenka Street. Sir Hari Ram Goenka Street. Goenka, no, unfortunately not Goranga, Goenka, but Hari and Ram is the Goenka. So he was a prominent businessman, I guess. Goenka is the Muslim businessman. So the street was named after him. And his parents had given him the name of Hari and Ram. So everyone will say, where are you going? I'm going to Sir Hari Ram Goenka Street. I'm going to Krishnanagar. So even the Muslims or even the atheists, they're constantly chanting the name of God. See, recently the Prime Minister of India, his name was Narasimha. Now it's Atal Bihari, which is also a name of Krishna. And actually the next one down from the Prime Minister, his name is Lal Krishna.
Krishna.
Lal Krishna Advani, but they always write LK, they don't write Lal Krishna. They want to avoid. So that culture is there by which, even if you try to avoid Krishna, it's very difficult. I was just discussing with Narakriti Prabhu yesterday about how the importance of trying to bring this culture of Krishna consciousness to the Western world. Well, the culture, if it's there, then it's difficult to forget Krishna, even if you try. So devotees are making a good start on that in the Western world by going everywhere and distributing Prabhupada's books. So that whether you're in the office, whether someone's in the office or the home or in the school, every so often someone will be coming and selling them a book. Devotees help to remind people of Krishna. That whole culture, the Vedic culture or Vaishnava culture, is to help us remember Krishna, which is all auspicious, as we see in the case of Ajamil. So all these things, dressing as Vaishnavas, wearing tilak, helps us to remember Krishna. Even the varieties of food, if we offer this food to Krishna, say, oh, this variety, this is cooked in Tirupati temple, this is one of the Lord's favorites, some variety of kachori, this is all Prabhupada, this is his favorite. Or different varieties of shark, green vegetables, Lord Chaitanya's favorite. So as you're taking, you can remember Krishna. That Krishna likes this. This is his favorite. This is what he eats in the winter. This is what Mother Yashoda cooks for him. So many things. So culture means that which covers every aspect of life. And culture is shaped on philosophy. It's like the modern culture. Why do people dress the way they do? Well, apart from utility, apart from utility, that you want to keep warm,
They're dressing for sense gratification. How to show off the body, or if you have too much body, how to hide if you've got too much. If you've got too little, how to make it look as if you've got more. To try to make the body look attractive for sense gratification. Because the whole culture, for lack of a better word, is based on sense gratification. But Vaishnava culture is based on pleasing Krishna and remembering Krishna. Therefore, everything in Vaishnava culture is related to Krishna. So culture means the way we dress, the way we act, the food we eat, the music we produce, or the music we sing or play or listen to, the way of life, our goal of life. Every aspect of life is covered by culture. You see here that Ajamil was saved from hellish life and raised to the highest platform because of the culture he was brought up in. Often I feel this is very sad. Often in the West we see our devotees that because of the force of the sense gratificatory culture, they're often carried away. Realistically speaking, we can't expect everybody who takes to Krishna consciousness to be very strong immediately. But if we're not strong, then we tend to be carried away by the sense gratificatory culture. Whereas if the culture is based on pleasing Krishna, then even if we're not strong, then we won't be grossly misled. So our Krishna conscious movement is meant for creating this Krishna conscious culture so that everybody can take part in it. Now when we think of culture, we also often think of dance, drama, entertainment, painting, all these things. So these give activities or something to occupy the mind. So these are very important also for the for ordinary people, that they can relate to Krishna consciousness or they can take part in Krishna consciousness. If there's some nice drama of Krishna conscious activities, then no need to turn on the TV and watch some nonsense thing. Or even on the TV, if there's nice Krishna conscious activities, we can watch that. Modern civilization has produced this television and entertainment industry. Television tends to be hypnotic. Turn it on and you become glued into it. So one of the purposes of the Krishna conscious movement is to give people an alternative to this degrading dramas that are shown on modern TV, to give people a musical alternative to all the degraded things that are being given in modern music, alternative mode of behavior. You see, the modern society is very competitive, and the mode of behavior tends to be aggressive.
Correct.
Everyone is trying to bring themselves up and put everyone else down. And cinema and TV has promoted, just like this Rambo, you have to be very aggressive. And they're promoting that women also should be tough and strong and kick the men out and everyone else out. Very aggressive, Rakshasa kind of civilization. Well, Krishna conscious culture is respectful to all. Advaishta sarva bhutanam. Maitra karma evacha. Krishna says, Krishna describes the devotee is very dear to him. First symptom, advishta sarva bhutanam. He's no inimical. He's not inimical towards any living being. He's a kind friend to all. So this culture we want to introduce, which those who are somewhat enlightened, they will appreciate that. So it's a great challenge to the devotees of this Krishna conscious movement to fulfill Srila Prabhupada's desire to become brahmanas and thus naturally lead human society by their qualities. Acharya means one who teaches by his behavior. So one who has developed the Vaishnava qualities, they will naturally set a good example to others. So every devotee is supposed to, by his behavior, activities, knowledge, supposed to give guidance to others. We have a great challenge ahead of us. Prabhupada many times said that we want to make the whole world Krishna conscious. Sometimes people think that, now the Krishna conscious movement, it's about 30 years old, so, it's already, it's
It's already finished. We already expanded enough. Now we should just sit and rot. Now it's
time to become a Babaji or something like this. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mood, as communicated to us by Srila Prabhupada, was that if there's one microbe in the universe who's not Krishna conscious, we should go and find him and preach to him. So we didn't get to that point yet, that we have to search for microbes to preach to. And there are still so many microbes in human bodies who are being... with the spiritual development of microbes and human bodies, microbial intelligence, who need to be reminded of Krishna. And still people are performing sinful activities. Nunang pramata, kurute vikarma, madman. So a devotee is not meant for early retirement. Prabhupada gave the example of his own life. He didn't retire. Up to his last breath, he was preaching Krishna consciousness. I personally saw that. I was surprised. Last darshan I had of Prabhupada was in October 1977. The devotee sat Prabhupada up on his bed. Prabhupada was going to eat something, which he hadn't done for weeks. So instead of eating, Prabhupada forgot all about it. He started preaching to all the devotees. He said, Sharira Avidya Jal, and then he started preaching how you have to control the mind and the senses. Yeah. Later the devotees... Prabhupada just tried to make him not strain himself too much, and everyone left, and Prabhupada left at a little bit. But that was Prabhupada showing us the perfection of Krishna consciousness. Okay. It was more natural for Prabhupada to preach than to eat. I saw that. Generally, we become very disturbed if we don't get something to eat. But Prabhupada was more concerned with preaching. He was preaching all the time. Give class twice a day, at least once a day, darshans, meeting with his leaders to discuss about the spreading of the Krishna conscious movement, always giving different ideas how to spread it more and more. And at night, when everyone else would go to sleep, then Prabhupada would preach to the world by dictating his books. And he pushed his disciples to do the same. The Krishna conscious movement spread so widely because Prabhupada was sending people here and there. Someone been in the Krishna conscious movement 1 year or 2 years, okay, go to Japan. Don't know Japanese. Never been out of America before. 22 years old. Read Bhagavad Gita once or twice. Okay, go and make Japan Krishna conscious. That was the mood. So, due to the emergency tactics, there may have been some things done which shouldn't have been done. In retrospect, you could say, well, it could have been done this way or that way or better. But in those days, it was just get out there and get the job done somehow or other. And as a result, Krishna consciousness spread very quickly all over the world. If we'd stopped and considered everything, well, should we do this or should we do that? I mean, some consideration was there, but if it'd been so much cautious. So nowadays, we should learn from experience and go on pushing, go on spreading the Krishna conscious movement, to give people the chance to be saved from having to meet Yamaraj, to give people the chance to be welcomed by the Vishnu Dutas at the time of death. That is the aim of the Krishna conscious movement, to give everyone the chance that Ajamil had, to be saved from hellish life and brought to Krishna. That's why we are a missionary movement. We are not a Babaji movement. Our movement is meant for activities, preaching activities. It's a good word, Hare Krishna movement. Movement means we should be always moving. Just like water, if it's moving, it remains fresh and pure. The chemical factory is next door to it. And that's also a danger. If some polluted idea enters, then we'll be moving, but we'll be full of contamination. Still water becomes stagnant. Moving water is fresh and pure. As long as there are not contaminations entering. Well, the nature of moving water is that even if contaminations enter, if that's detected and the contaminations are stopped from entering, then by the very nature that it's moving, it will purify itself. So we see that as long as our movement remains dynamic and active and trying to bring Krishna consciousness to others, then it remains very pure and pleasing because activities are being performed for the pleasure of Krishna. Krishna gives his blessings, and devotees become Krishna conscious. So we should go on with the Hare Krishna movement. Movement is back to Godhead. That's Srila Prabhupada said. Once at the Kumbh Mela, Prabhupada was there. So many tents with so many organizations, with all kinds of everything imaginable and unimaginable. So Prabhupada asked the devotees, that, what is the difference between our camp and everyone else's camp? Prabhupada himself answered the question, our movement is the back to Godhead movement. Everyone else will be rotating within this material world for all their yoga, sitting on thorns and standing on their head, smoking dope or whatever they may be doing. They're staying within this material world. But our movement is for going back to Godhead and bringing everyone else too. That is what Prabhupada gave us very kindly. Prabhupada laid a lot of stress on this story of Ajamil. More than once he gave a series of lectures on this. There are many important lessons here. We should study regularly. Consider how we're also being saved from hellish condition or going to hell condition. And we should consider our good fortune and not fall back again, but go forward in Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna. Any question, please?
Task.
Sometimes we can observe that a full dose of contamination is done in the holy waters of Krishna consciousness movement. I've seen, for example, sometimes devotees say they think so material well, like mundane videos and such things, and they become very passionate about such things. And as a result of this, they sometimes become even like accepted in general among the larger public of devotees. I find it sometimes very concerning that such things are going on and they become accepted, so that we kind of accept this contamination as a part of the moving waters of this movement.
Yeah, there's always some kind of deviation going on. Someone always has some wonderful idea about how to improve Krishna consciousness. That what we really need, what we're really lacking is this or that or something else. There's always something. What's really going to spread Krishna consciousness is this, you have to get this book by some new age guru or something.
So these
passions come and go. Sometimes people become very enamored by these things. That's also a cleansing process, because people who become enamored by these things, they eventually float off into their own brand of neo-Hinduism.
Kdo se nechá okouzlit těmihle věcmi, tak nakonec si sám vytvoří vlastní prout neo-hinduismu. Okay.
Why I say neo-Hinduism? Well, what is Hinduism? Hinduism means originally there's Krishna consciousness, and then there's so many different interpretations, so-called improvements, deviations. So in the Western world also we have our own Western ideas. And we introduce these things. And just like Hinduism, it's like kind of Krishna conscious, but not exactly to the point. So that's there in the West also. And for some time, some of these deviations may appear to be something wonderful to some people. It's not that everybody follows them. But then after some time, because it's not pleasing to Krishna and it's not according to Shastra, then all the bad results of it become apparent. And then those who actually want to be Krishna conscious can see that, well, actually maybe it's not so good after all. And those who are fixed in the teachings of Guru, Sadhu and Shastra knew that from the beginning anyway. So our movement is a very big movement and somewhat unwieldy in some ways.
Really?
Unwieldy means it's not like a state dictatorship or something like that, which is everyone's controlled down to the movement of their hairs on their body.
Says
that you can't read this book or like that. Instruction is given, but if people don't follow it, then what can you do? So therefore, those who are concerned to maintain the purity of this movement, they should stick to the principles as given by our founder Acharya. Live according to that and preach according to that. And those who are serious to follow, they will follow. And those who have not properly understood Krishna consciousness or maybe have some different motive, then they'll be attracted by all these different funny ideas. It's not going to change. There's always going to be some deviation or other. Because Maya has many different forms. That's why we study Bhagavatam every day. So that we get the Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam Mukta Sangasya Jayati. We get the knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam by which we can be liberated from all these materialistic ideas. So Srimad Bhagavatam lecture should be based upon that which is given to us by Guru Sadhavan Shastra. At least during that time there should be no discussion of karma, jnana or yoga except to debunk it, refute it, throw it out. And then during the course of the day, if anyone introduces us to something which is apparently Krishna conscious, but is not according to Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, then we can see this is some combination or permutation of karma, jnana and yoga. It's not what we want. A very good formula that will keep us safe. It may not be very sophisticated, apparently. A very good formula is to stick to what Prabhupada gave us. And then if anyone brings anything else, you can just say, well, you know, I'm old-fashioned, I just stick to what Prabhupada gave us. And of course they may say, well, actually, you know, it's just in line with what Prabhupada said. It's just exactly the same. You know, some management expert has written something, and actually you see Prabhupada used to do all these things himself, so it's the same as Prabhupada. So it may be so, but if you want to be safe, then you make your guru, sadhu, shastra based on Bhagavatam, not on some management book. Otherwise, I've seen in our movement that there have been different management theories which have been the solution, one after the other. And a few years ago, some members of our movement, they would quote a certain management guru as if he was the acharya. They quote him more than Prabhupada. And they would say, well, Kavi says, as if, you know, that's the final authority on everything. So, no doubt, this man, Kavi, has many good observations, which can be applied in Krishna consciousness also. But he's not a self-realized soul. Therefore, he makes mistakes. Therefore, we should be very careful not to be taken in by his whole world view. It's true that we can take knowledge from different sources and use in Krishna consciousness. But we have to be very careful, because if you take knowledge from non-devotees, then inherent in what they're saying is the worldview which they hold. It's subtly inherent in everything they say and do. So then when this caveitis plague was going on, we were told that, well, actually he believes in God. It's okay, it doesn't mean he's a pure devotee. No? Doesn't mean we have to accept everything he says because he believes in God. Well, probably Bill Clinton believes in God too, but that doesn't mean we should imitate his behavior. Although there may be some things we could learn from him too. Maybe, I don't know, I haven't studied. But then, you know, he's an intelligent guy. Maybe he knows some things which we could also apply. Often, non-devotees, they may have some insights into human nature. Just like recently I read a quote from Abraham Lincoln, that he has a right to criticize who has a heart to help. So it's a good observation, which we can apply in Krishna consciousness also. And it may be that someone has many good observations. But then the danger is that if they have many good observations, and we start to think that everything they say is correct. So that's why we should be fixed in Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, and not be fascinated by things that non-devotees say. We can take that Prabhupada used to quote Chanakya, we can take knowledge, good instruction even from a fool. Fool generally isn't expected to give good instruction, but circumstantially if he does, a wise man can recognize it and take it. However, our center is Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, and we should be very careful not to be deviated from that.
I wonder why if Yamaru does come for the Achamrita at the time of death, because he was chanting the holy name during his life, so he was purified already.
Well, they didn't know that, did they? You'll find the whole story. The story is yet to be told. that later on, after this incident, they were told by Yamaraj, don't approach those who chant the names of Narayana. And previous to that, they didn't know that. But he wasn't chanting throughout his life. His last son was named Narayana. There's no record of his previous sons being given a name of Vishnu. In his youth, he was worshipping Narayana. And just at the end of life, his son, who was how many years old? 5 years old. So for the last 5 years, he was chanting the name of Narayana. So he wasn't exactly chanting. He performed many sinful activities. That's why the Yamadutas were surprised. How is it that we're being denied? Obviously, this person is sinful. Yes, they were surprised when the Vishnu Dutas came. You appear to be very saintly people by your bodily effulgence and beauty. You appear to be very pious. Then why are you obstructing us? We are carrying out the work of universal justice. It is absolutely proper and just, the Yamadutas thought, that we should take away Ajamil for punishment. They were surprised. Later they learned from Yamaraj what the actual situation was. Not in the same way that he's the agent for punishing. He performs judgment, and then if there's punishment to do, the hellish punishment, that's under him. Heavenly pleasure, that's a different part of the universe. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.